You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody. Here we go again. Welcome to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby with me, Alex Payne. It's not an exaggeration to say there is quite a bit to get into this week. Why don't we just headline it? Scots joy, Ochai the new, French flair, Irish indiscipline, problems for England and the unwavering Welsh. And then, of course, there's Italy. No guests this week. I think in times of crisis, it's nice to just pull together and go with what you know. And so Husk and Lord are back. So look, what was a fascinating opening weekend in the Guinness Six Nations. We're going to try and do it with reason, with good grace, and with a fair amount of understanding. There are lots of other places you can go to if you want vitriol and explosions and Armageddon. Let's try and just chat it through. That's what we're here for. Before we get into that, how are we? What's the news? Lord, you're tired.
Groundhog Day, isn't it, really? We wake up on a Monday, off we go again. English, 9:30. Try and get a bike ride in before that with Mia, just get some exercise. And then the week starts and hopefully you wake up and it's ended.
Did you go all the way? All of it or just the week? did you go all the way in the Super Bowl?
I literally must have fallen asleep with...
There's our first literally, Husk, just before we started recording. Yeah. We're in for one. Good.
I must have fallen asleep, but I think there was 4:30 on the clock, but no one scored after that anyway. So I think I saw the best of it.
Does anyone rival Brady in any sport ever at this point in time?
Tiger would be up there, but you can't knock the fella. Can you at 42, still getting it done? 20 mil a year in the bank, Husk, you take that, wouldn't you? You still be
that, but that stressed me out. I watched it last night, and instead of, like, I talked about it before, I was never that happy for other people, but or when you would see other people do stuff, it would spark like feelings of myself. And I sat there watching him at 42, you know, change teams, carve up with his mate, the great Gronkowski, you know, absolutely, clear up. And I'm sitting there going, how am I 35 and I can't do anything? But then it did dawn on me that he is a quarterback. He hasn't really been in contact for about 10 years and he gets paid a fortune. So my dog is trashing the place here. My purse is completely matched.
Yeah, right.
We're doing lots of training with him at the moment and he's just started collecting and fetching dummies, and not like people, but dummies, you know, jumping in and out.
He's collecting the cadavers of the East Midlands.
And he jumps in and out of bushes now. We're collecting dummies and stuff. So it's great. He's jumping in water. He's having the time of life. But he gets, at this time of night, like most people, he gets a little bit frisky and starts drilling his bed. And I can't understand why. It's quite shocking to watch. Quite aggressive as well. I'd hate to be Lady Bert. I don't think I'm
here. he hangs around with his father. That's why.
Well, I don't know where he's learned a couple of moves, because I'm watching him for moves. I've never seen the clamp down on the neck operation and the hip mobility, the thrusting. I know you've got new internet, but if I tell you that fast, I'd need a hip replacement. apart from that,
talking of which, you've been working with Durex this week. We've had we're going through pretty much every single one of the Unilever brands right now. Talk us through. I mean, I know more about your sex life at the moment than I do about my own. Just the amount of content that's coming out, watching couples quarantine as well. Talk us through Durex.
It's an interesting one. So the whole idea of the campaign is that people wait for Valentine's Day. This put a load of pressure on to have sex, when actually you can have sex any time of the day, with anyone consenting, obviously. And it's just quite a nice opportunity to celebrate your kind of a little party for one, your partner, your boyfriend, your husband, whatever, you know, girlfriend, whatever it might be, wife. And it just encourages you to have sex on every other day apart from Valentine's Day. Don't put the pressure on. Enjoy yourself. And Chloe and I were in full agreement. I came to her and was like, right, now Durex has said we can do it. We're in. And she told me to piss off. She was busy. So never mind.
I was a bit worried when you said for a party of one. I thought you were just going to an extreme for a posh.
That's part of it. That's what part of it. Lots of people in lockdown are on their own. If they want to treat themselves, there's a wider range of lubricants, everything else to get real. You know, what I used to do was put a lady's wristwatch on and paint my fingernails. I called it the stranger. I used to do it with the left hand. I was like, oh, hello, who's this coming to the party? When I was on my own.
The old lie on the wrong hand trick, was it?
Yeah. goes numb, and you're like that. Oh, hello. So, yeah,
I love the fact that English rugby is in its greatest crisis for, well, let's say 12 months, and we're starting off with a Poshie and Durex as our new brand ambassador.
And that is why that we're the show that people come to listen to, Alex.
I did, funny enough, I'd messaged Tins in the week. Did you see that lady who cropped up on BBC with an enormous phallus on her bookshelf? I did think we could hide one in Tins' background and just sort of get hello all a fluster, but we haven't managed to do that. We've just sort of, we're keeping it clean this week. And there'll be a lot of people leaning into the YouTube video at this point, trying to spot.
I've got a cage behind me. So, someone spotted that the other day, and it was actually, for the first time, I did a pre-match thing with our friends and partners, Amazon. And it was the first time that I was like, didn't swear, didn't tell any. They went, what's your best story? We know swearing, kids are on. I was like, thanks for having me. They're like, you haven't said anything. I was like, I can't say anything. And then Kenny Logan was on it. And when Kenny was like, look, what's that cage behind you? And my first reaction, because we're doing the Good Bro Rugby, we say, oh, I stick Chloe in it, which is bad. But on there, I was like, well, actually, let me explain. I've got a new dog. I bored everyone to death. And you can see Kenny and like Will Carling like, oh, fuck, what's happened to you, Askew, you dull fuck?
Good. Should we talk Six Nations? It's hanging over everything, and it does sort of, if you're an England fan, it does sort of slightly sum up the world right now. Before we do that, I want to get into Scotland, because they just were brilliant, and let's pump up their tyres before we do anything else. Obviously, great to see. I loved, actually, Stuart Hogg's lovely touch in getting the two debutants to lift the trophy, which I thought was just a really nice finale to a great day for them. But congratulations to the Scots. No one wants a 38-year losing run in any sport. It's not much fun. But let's big up Gregor, Scotland, the Thistle, first of all, Tins. How good were they? And how much was it about Scotland being brilliant on the day as opposed to England being poor?
No, I think we've said on this show, and I sort of said it on a tweet on Saturday night, there are, you know, in the Six Nations right now, there are two teams that I would buy tickets for. And I've said this for a few years now, and that would be Scotland and now France. So we've seen this coming. We've seen what they can do. We saw them come back from 31-7 down or whatever it was to actually throw the game away to draw 38 all in the end. And even though Finn Russell tried at the end with those drop goals to sort of get charged down and us go the whole length of the field and then somehow managed to lose it, they held on. And I think it's great for Scottish rugby because we said last week how we actually rate this squad and how I really like it. Great to see Cam Redpath, you know, people who do come on the show end up going on to greatness. So we have no doubt that it was all us. He stepped up and looked so like he'd been there for years. I mean, he was so solid. It was unbelievable. And then, you know, Hoggy played well. I just thought their kicking game was far better than ours. Now, everyone says we kicked all the time. Actually, Scotland kicked more than we did, but their kicks were decent. Whereas all ours were aimless, long, too long, easy to field. Whereas all theirs were competitive, caused our back three loads of problems. And then they played with the ball, 70% of the ball. You know, that's why they probably kicked more than us, because they had every single bit of the ball. But no, fair credit to them. I think they've been a team that's been on the edge. You know, I think about the last couple of games they played with Ireland, where we always say they should have won that, they could have won that. Could this game now change their mindset that those tight games that they have lost in the past, they will now go on and win? And I hope they do, because I do like the makeup of that team. I like so many players within it, and hopefully they will.
It's been a long time coming, if you're being honest, for Scotland. You know, they've had their flashes, but in terms of the comprehensive nature of it, I mean, is that as big a 11-6 thrashing as England have had? I mean, England in some ways did bloody well to cling on to a losing bonus point. You think of the Duane van der Merwe, the ball bounced out of his head. Watson got held up. Two penalties that went wide. I mean, Hask, it could have been very, very ugly on the scoreboard as well as on the pitch for England.
I think there's no getting away from it. It was a very, very difficult day for England. And I think it was made difficult by an incredible Scotland side who did everything right. You know, I love the flair from Hoggy, the way he attacked. Obviously, Finn Russell was brilliant. Yes, I still think he has that danger factor about him in terms of like throwing things away, as Tin says. The player that obviously Hamish Watson, looking at the back row, I thought all of Scotland's back row were fantastic. I thought Hamish Watson, who's been around for a while and has always caused us problems, and he's always somebody that we would target. I thought he was brilliant. But, you know, Redpath, to me, I know we joked about sharing a room with him. I actually messaged him after the game. I wondered if he'd pretend that he didn't know me, but he did. And I said to him, look, was it because I shared a room with you? And he said, yeah, it's because you wouldn't shut the fuck up about your book. But the worst of it was, it wasn't even the book I've done now. It was my old fitness book. So I had a good chat with him, and He was utterly fantastic. And do you know what I was surprised about? When I met him, I thought he was quite a smallish guy with not, you know, small in stature, or maybe because he was a lot younger. But the way he carried over the game line, the way they used him over the top of the line, how destructive he was. I really liked how creative Scotland were as well. You know, they were brilliant. Every time they got the ball, they got over the game line. That's what disappointed me about England. You know, there's better people placed to talk about attack. But one thing I was just disappointed was knowing how well-drilled the lads are and how passionate they are. It was just defensively, we just got our height wrong so many times. And, you know, we just didn't seem to be as destructive as we were. You know, I thought Ellis Genge, I know he got penalised, but I thought that was a brilliant hit. I thought Harry Williams, you know, put some hits in Courtney Laws when he came on. We just probably just missed a little bit of bite and we're going too high. And I think in the past, we could have dealt with Scotland doing that, but we just couldn't. They had momentum. They had their tails up. They had a lot of ball. They kicked really well. We were under pressure and we didn't get any purple patches in that game at all. There was a last bit of spell, the last spell in the last 5 minutes to go where every team sort of has their tail up and we ended up fucking it up and kicking it away or something. But I think it's nothing to do with England. I think it's to do with the fact that Scotland were awesome. And I think England, to be honest with you, it's a kick in the balls. But it's a good kick in the balls because it will just waken them up, sharpen them up, maybe look at how they're training the lads, maybe look at their game plan. But Eddie was, I think, was honest after the game and said that he probably didn't prepare them well enough and that he's got to take responsibility. He didn't shy away from it. I think he was very complimentary of Scotland.
Yeah, I think actually it would have suited England better if Scotland had scored those two tries because it would have made them have to change what they were doing. That's been the biggest disappointment for me with England, is their lack of ability to change. Obviously, there's been pictures of the 7-on-2 that they kicked away when they should have obviously moved it. I just feel, you look at Elliot Daly now, this great runner of the ball. I don't ever remember seeing him run anymore. All I see him is getting it open space, then grubbering it along the floor. And this is the problem. You've got the runners that like May out wide and whoever they pick on the other wing, whether it be Watson, whether it be Jack Noel, whoever, you've got two centres who never see the ball. Why would you want to play for England as centre at the moment? And that's someone like myself who likes to truck it up. You know, Ollie Lawrence is there for a reason. Let him actually carry the ball up into someone or give him an opportunity. And that really frustrates me is when you can't deliver the energy to play at a high tempo game and not be able to then change on the hoof when you realise things aren't working and you still keep kicking the ball away when your kicking is really poor. And that went across the board. I was hoping when Dan Robson came on that we might change a little bit, but he put up a couple of bad kicks in as well. And you could just feel the energy. I don't think they didn't look like they had a lot of energy throughout the whole game. But then when those kicks are going straight down people's throat, easy fielding, someone like Stuart Hogg, you're like, you could just see him deflating more and more. And as Hass said, what we've then got away with in terms of lack of attack is our energy in defence and up in the people's faces and just causing absolute... When that's not there, it highlights it even further that you're so off the pace in terms of what your attack's doing. And, yeah, we missed a couple of lineouts at key times as well in the opposition 22. And, yeah, and I mean, it's one of those things where you can't judge England's failures that led to Scotland's. I think Scotland are a quality team and they have been all for a few years. And they got that win that they deserved. But I think them going 20 points up would have made England have to change and look at actually playing with some ball in hand. And that could have been better for the game and for England.
I just want, it's inevitably, you know, you end up swinging back to England because, you know, they are the ones that the three of us will keep our eyes on more. But I just want to keep going on Scotland a little bit, and particularly with Gatland having been in the stands. Recent Lions tour, we've not had a lot of Scots, and we've certainly not had a lot of Scots who've been genuine sort of test starters or test frontline players. You know, you go 89 in Calder and you go 93 in Hastings. And then in 97, you had your Townsends and your, you know, Tom Smiths, who probably came from outside the front runners into that test team. And then since then, there haven't been very many at all. Do you feel when you look at the performance of some of those Scotland players, Watson, Russell, you know, Hogs, this will be his third tour if it comes together for him. But I don't necessarily think he'd have been a test starter. Possibly in New Zealand, he could have got close, but Liam Williams went really well. Those players who are performing really well and have beaten England, do you feel that some of them have got to go over and above to get the call up under Gatland because they haven't got that bank of sort of consistency at this level under their belt in the way that an Atoje and a Farrell will have done, having A-toured, B, played for the Lions, C, been to a World Cup final, etc. Can you see the question I'm trying to ask? Have some of these Scotland players got to go to higher levels on a consistent basis over the next 5, 6, 7, 8 weeks in order to get that?
That's a great question, and the simple answer is, if you based it on purely a media and public perspective, the answer is absolutely no. You should pick people on talent. You should pick people, the best person playing in that position now. Now, if you actually understand the structure of teams and the importance of touring and balance and everything else, there's so much more to it than that. You know, just because someone has one game, a good game 1 week, doesn't mean they have the consistency to step up to the next level, doesn't know that they're able to be away from the family. There are so many facets of putting a player together. Do they fit the dynamic? Are they actually in your plans? Do they fit the way you want to play? And I know a lot of people do it, especially with Eddie. It's almost like they hype a player up and Eddie goes the other way and doesn't pick them. And that's, I don't know why he does that, whatever. He's got his own kind of reasons for that. But I think, yes, they will have to, because they haven't been consistent at this level. And I think they will do. But also on the flip side of that is that you don't become a bad player overnight. So while, you know, some of those guys didn't play particularly well for England, you know, they have shown what they can do. They have shown what they can do in the crucible of, you know, the Lions tour and delivered. However, where you've got the 50-50 players and the people around the edge, yes, you can back those Scottish players. And I wouldn't have put, you know, I looked at it, maybe Marrow, because he did a few charge downs and bits and pieces, but I probably wouldn't have put many English players, if any, in that squad in comparison to Scotland. You know, I would have gone Scotland, I would have gone Hogg, Russell, the Ferguson boys, I would have gone, that Van der Merwe is an absolute unit. Well, anyway, huge unit. And I just think, yes, they will have to push it, but there is more to it than that. There is more to it than just going, pick the best players. And rightly so, because there's so much more to putting a team together, managing a team, than just that.
Yeah, and you've got to understand that Warren Gatland's picking the team. So whether you love Warren or hate him, you know sort of the type of game that you're going to get off him. So does a player's style of play fit into what he sees? Now, that's going to be... These are all things that players can't control. They've just got to turn up and play as well as they can. And as Hass said, there'll be people who talk about it in the media and say, why, how's he not gone? But you know, you only have to look back to the Australia where Gats brought back all the, dropped Dricko and brought back all the Welsh boys and got the job done with people who he knew and knew how they wanted to play. So, yeah, I don't think you'd judge it. I mean, if you went through the team now, and you went through the team of all the Six Nations, if you take out France, there'd be 4, 5, 6 Scottish players in there without a shadow of a doubt. There'd be a couple of others from elsewhere. But yeah, as you say, your Hamish Watsons. I like that George Turner. The front row's great. Cam Redpath would have been in there. Finn Russell, Hoggy. So there's some definite players of the, you know, if you picked a Six Nations team of the week, that would be in the mix.
But for example, you're telling me as well, like, I'm in agreement with you, but you're telling me as an independent selector, you're not going to put Mauro Itoje in your starting Lions team.
Well, exactly. That's what I
mean. Yeah, you're telling me that you wouldn't put Jamie George. You wouldn't put Jamie George in, who's fucking been to that. It's like this is what upsets me, is that it is there are people that would earn the right to go, but there is a big difference between the ability to go on and kick it on to the next level. And those people, you know, have proven themselves. Yes, you only have a finite life. Like, I remember when we played in Australia, Tins, you were on that tour, the Australia tour, and the first test we lost to Australia. And I remember Lewis Moody was playing seven at the time, and he missed, for Zali, for Lewis, he missed like 8 tackles off the back of the line. It was where Quade Cooper was running. And I remember John Wells taking me to the side. I was like, well, obviously I'm going to get a start. He's like, no, you know, it's Lewis Moody. We know he's got credit in the bank. That one game for Lewis, you know, the next game he turned up and we won the game, and they were absolutely proven right. One bad test does not mean that your boys are shit and you're never going to be seen again. But there's no level-headed thought. Like, I took great delight in the last few days of dropping onto the England Instagram, reading all the comments: sack them, fire them, Owen Farrell shit, Eddie Jones shit, everyone should die. And I would just be writing on there going, another quality collection of level-headed, comments.
Yeah, I think you're bang on, and it's impossible to say. Now, where you could pick Eddie is the stuff that we talked about last week. The Saracens players, you know, Hass said there's already a ready-made excuse if they don't go well, it's because they haven't played for 6 weeks. Now, he makes that call though, and he's put a lot of faith in them. Whether they've overtrained during the week because they are worried about them not being game fresh or whatever it might be, they weren't where you would expect them to be. Now, he put them in that situation, so that's probably why he's taken responsibility for it. But he didn't need to. He had enough good players that have earned a chance around, whether it be Ford from his Autumn Nations form and another option at number eight, whether it be Willis, whether it be... There are options where he didn't need to go down that route, but he still decided to. And I don't think it worked out. You know, as much as I love Billy, I don't think Billy's been in great form through the autumn and then through Six Nations. We know he needs to be playing every week in, week out. He didn't have to make that call. He could have brought him off the bench and he would have probably gone on rampaging runs with the last 30 minutes. So there are interesting calls within that, and that's what they'll have to answer and they'll have to front up to. But as Hass said, you have to remember how many British and Irish Lions there are in that English team. I just feel that the way that we are being told to play at the moment doesn't inspire them to bring the best out of them. And when their defence isn't where it needs to be, I thought Marrow was good. He gave away too many penalties on the weekend, but I still thought he was chasing it. It doesn't work for England. So then you've got to be able to switch into something else. And again, we haven't had that ability to switch game plans. Or
just on that, give me some... Everyone always says England, when it goes wrong for them, they don't have the ability to switch and therefore work their way out of it. Which team does?
This is what really upsets me about fans, about armchair people and journalists, right? You're sitting in a stadium in calm, zero pressure, zero intensity. You have not practiced a game plan all week. You are not involved in anything other than watching. And from your aerial view or your side view, you can see what is going wrong, right? When you're on the field and you have 15 players who have spent all week drilling a certain way of playing, and then you've got to take away the general thing of, say, for example, Marrow gives two charge downs in the first seconds. Fucking Marrow, we're going to do Scotland here. Then he gives a couple of penalties away. But in his mind, he's thinking, well, I got two charge downs, so, you know, what I'm doing is okay. And then you've got Owen going, well, one kick didn't go well, but I know how good I am at kicking, so I'm going to put it here. You suddenly get people who are sticking to the game plan, but making mistakes, but trying to correct themselves because they know if they got it right in the first place, it would have gone well. It's so hard. It's like trying to turn an oil tank around in the middle. It's so hard for everyone to collectively put their male egos to one side, to fucking get clarity of what's going on, to not force it. Because the one thing that you can tell me that all the players like, oh, well, the media and fans, like, they lacked imagination, lacked intensity. Every player on that field was trying. Whether they weren't very good, whether they were really good at it, is fucking here. Is neither here nor there. They were definitely fucking trying. I can tell you that. They might not be very good, but they were trying. And for people who make mistakes, you then try harder. So you've got all that going on, and then to go, by the way, lads, we've got to start playing a game that we haven't drilled, we haven't done, and that's the biggest problem. The only team I've ever seen do that is New Zealand, where they go to a couple of tries down, composure. And they suddenly stick to what they were doing. But their game plan is actually quite simplistic anyway. They score tries down the end of the line, you know?
Yeah. That comes down to being training with balance. It's very easy to start out here, wide, jouer, and bring it to here. It is impossible to start here and suddenly go out there. So if you're training all the week about playing pressure game, kick chase, box, and then you haven't worked on this, you can't go to that wide game. You can't go to that space game. And that's why New Zealand is so... Well, I mean, people will argue that they're not as good as they were right now, but why historically they've been so good is their balance is the whole width of the pitch, and then they pick and choose what they do. If there's space on, like a 7-on-2, there is no chance they ain't going wide to take that space. If they lose momentum and they are halted on the gain line, they will box kick and try and get the ball back. But all their facets of the game are well rehearsed and well practiced. And that's the idea, is the main driver of rugby now is the speed of ball at the breakdown. You know, even Ireland, and you know that I'm never going to shout to the rooftops about how Ireland played. You know, when they went down to 40 men, how they lifted the tempo, even though they played quite straightforward rugby, the ball was so quickly away from the breakdown. It was good to watch because it was fast, it was up, and they were allowed to do more. As soon as it goes slow and turgid again, then it becomes boring. And that was the same with England, is even when they were on the front foot, they would still put the ball in behind. Well, when you're on the front foot, why don't you give the likes of Ollie Lawrence or Slade or Johnny May, give them the ball and then see what you can do. If they get stopped and they go back.
What is the answer to that, though, Tins? Why are they not... Why is Ollie Lawrence not getting the ball until 61 minutes?
I don't know, Eddie. I have a feeling Eddie is now trying to, after the World Cup final, he's trying to learn how you win when you don't have the ball. Unfortunately, they didn't have the ball, but they didn't win. And but the, I don't know is my question, because you know it came up on the old Smutby WhatsApp group about the England-New Zealand game. They can play at that level. What they should be chasing is to continuously be able to play at that level. A perfect game of balanced rugby where they were aggressive in defence, they were fantastic in attack, they were in your face in attack. They kicked the same amount of times in that game as they did on Saturday. But it's completely different kicking, because it's not, oh my God, why have you done that again? Oh my God, why have you done that? Because you have the balance in between of what you want to see: intensity, fast-flowing rugby, people having a chance, in options inside, outside of 10. That's the crux of it. When you get sucked into that sort of turgid game, you can't get out of it. And that was the problem for England on the weekend.
Do you know what I'm also, you know, I'm really intrigued as well, because again, we're just looking through a frosted glass window trying to guess what's going on. And it's always interesting.
We're just people window lickers.
Essentially, trying to get an idea of what's going on. I'll say two things. I think obviously the World Cup final, I think that's a great point from Tins, is that South Africa, I think, did not play that attractive rugby during the majority of that tournament. But how they won was they stuck to their game plan, delivered, and you know, in the final, actually, ironically, they opened up and you know, then we had Ches and Colby carving us up. So I think there is something in that, because ultimately it's about winning at all costs, not necessarily trying to play flair. And I don't have a problem with that. I know the purists, you know, we'd always want people to have interesting games. I think it's important for the growth. But, you know, the ultimate, if we won the World Cup playing that kind of rugby, no one would have given a shit. We'd just all be celebrating. So that's one thing to think about. But what's interesting, if you watch the next level stuff, because that's the closest we can get to being inside the camp without being invited in, they look like they're playing expansive rugby. I know, having been there myself not that long ago, is that we've never, ever tried to play this super conservative game. You know, there is active encouragement of guys to play from broken field, to apply pressure, but to apply pressure in the right areas. When I was playing even just club rugby, what would really upset me was in our own half, you get second rows rushing you to the line out, you get guys rushing a call, and then you fuck the throw up, you don't clear your lines. Whereas in your half, you need to take things at your own pace. You're in control. When you're in their half, that's when you accelerate things. That's when you start putting pressure on. That's when you start to play. And all I can see from those videos is that they're trying to play this free-flowing rugby, but it doesn't seem to be translating. And I don't know whether it's because, you know, things like if you're losing collisions and you're on the back foot in defence, for example, if you're just not getting over the gain line yourself, if boys aren't penetrating, and then you're going, well, do you know what? For all intents and purposes, we've made no yards here. Let's kick. And the kicking isn't right. It then seems to be almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because you don't seem to get anywhere. And I just wonder if they aren't caught into that kind of mode at the moment, from what I saw. And whereas Scotland, because they were getting over the gain line, when they kicked, they were front foot. They had men on their feet. They had guys that were able to attack and put pressure on. But look, I don't know exactly what they're doing. I just know that I've never been in a team coached by Eddie or coached by anybody else where we're trying to play boring shit rugby. But sometimes it just doesn't translate, and there must be a missing link, you know, I don't know.
To put it into a different dynamic, if you look at Bristol versus Sale, Bristol run it from everywhere. When you come against a defence that gets on top of you and causes you real threat at breakdown time, you then need to have to change that a little bit as well. And Bristol didn't change. So this is what Haskey's saying. Is it win at all costs, or do you live by the sword, die by the sword, where you try and run it all the time, but it's not actually suited to the game? You know, Sale aren't a massive threat in terms of tries, but they are a massive threat from turnover and defensively. So then should Bristol have changed? So it works both ways, and you've just got to be able to shift between the two. But it's an art of feeling the flow of a game. But we have a guy at 9 who's got over 100 caps, and you've got a guy at 10 who's got 80 odd caps. Now, they should be able to sense that. You know, I hate going back to good old days. You know, you had Jono, Lawrence, Dawes, just stick a foot on the ball, kick cat, someone jump to the floor, and go, right, 10 minutes, drive in, pick and go, keep it tight, and we'll try and get some continuity back into the game, and then we'll open it up later. I don't know whether rugby's coached necessarily always that way. But we know, but as Hass said, this is the frustrating side of it, is we've seen it, they can do it, we know they can, and it is a, I believe, a one-off game. That squad is still absolutely packed with talent. But, you know, when you get to watch it, you just get more frustrated and you start shouting at your TV.
And, Alex, I'm not a big annoyance as you, but I'd like you just to cast your mind back. Just cast your mind back a little while, because I feel a sense of deja vu coming on. Didn't this happen when we lost to France at the beginning of the last Six Nations?
It did, James.
Wasn't it a similar narrative? Didn't everyone say, Eddie's lost the plot, get rid of Eddie? Didn't everybody say that Owen Farrell wasn't fit to be captain? Didn't everybody say that we were shit and didn't have to
be lost two games on the bounce, the World Cup final and the France game. Sack them all.
Didn't I see the headline or a comment section, long-suffering England fans are tired of this bullshit. You lost a final, you sad bastards, and you fucking lost against France. And then we went and won the Six Nations. Now, whether we end up playing a third...
And the Autumn Nations
team,
Cup.
And the Autumn Nations Cup. Yeah, even if we didn't do those, nobody cares at the end of the day. On the bottom of a trophy, it doesn't say, brackets, they were a shit French team that should have won. No, it just says we won. So my point is that we have to progress. I understand that they're not playing the kind of rugby, and there were many holes in it. But it was Scotland's incredible play, which I think should be applauded, because they played extremely well. But Tins made a very succinct point comparing Bristol to Sale, is that if, for example, when you're playing, you have limited opportunities to compete for the ball. So if you imagine a kickoff's a set piece, a line-out's a set piece, a scrum's a set piece, and the breakdown is a chance for you to win. If every time you put your hands in there, the referee is fucking you because you're making mistakes, so you're not playing the referee, so that's a weapon gone. If you're dropping kickoffs, the weapon's gone. If you're losing scrums and lights, your weapon, you suddenly don't have any foothold in the game. And all your tools are blunted. And the one thing is that if people focus on the wrong things, like the kicking and stuff, if you had at least two sharp tools and two blunt ones, we're fine. There was nothing sharp. There was nothing sharp. Everything was out. And even worse, we just got penalised. Whereas everything about Scotland was sharp. They got some pressures at a breakdown. They got some turnovers at a breakdown. Their set piece was better than ours. Their kickoffs were better than ours. Their line speed was better than ours. And they got over that. They were fully sharp. And we looked like a spoon. But I promise you, they will be hammering it this week, and they will come back all guns blazing, because you do not become a shit team overnight. And the best thing about this England team, the best thing about Eddie Jones, is that he loves to be on the ropes. He's like a caged fucking honey badger thing that's like, they're going to poke him with a stick.
And he's letting his wife just punch him in the face at the moment. Harder, love.
That's what I mean. And I think this England team thrives on that. You're telling me that you're not going to have honest conversations from Owen Farrell, from Marrow, from, you know, the boys, from Jamie George, from Elliot Daly. These guys aren't going to sit in a meeting and go, this isn't good enough. They're going to be harder on themselves than ever the media and stuff will be. And I think we should celebrate Scotland, because what's the best thing about sport is, do you know what? Fucking sometimes teams win and sometimes teams lose. And the best thing is, a team that hasn't won for a while at one place gets to win, because you don't get to be invincible forever. Just a shock.
I quite liked it. I was thinking of when you were trying to sum that up. I was like, so basically, Scotland turned up with a knife and fork, and we rocked up with a spork.
Yeah, a spork. Yeah, we did. We turned up
in a Tupperware box.
We turned up with a spatula, one of them ones that Delia Smith used. That was the end of it.
But it is funny you said. I mean, I'm absolutely no apologist, but I just think if you do take a step back, I mean, we are in the midst of Armageddon, and if you are an England side that is panicking about the fact that the key third of your team hasn't played for 3 months and therefore you all overtrain, you're in an empty stadium. I just can't imagine how much fun it is right now. I mean, I know Joe Marler, you know, isn't there, but, you know, I imagine for him, you know, and for the whole lot of them, you know, if you're used to playing in front of packed houses and, you know, you get off on big days, rattling around in an empty stadium. I mean, Ellis said before he went in last week that they're probably all in one-in-one-out rooms. I mean, they're not even sort of gathering as a squad the whole time. I'm not making apologies, but if you're used to a certain way of getting yourself up for a game, all of the foundation stones that you... I mean, I think Eddie was coaching them through Zoom for a third of the build-up because he was in quarantine. I mean, you've got to be able to understand, I think, that sometimes if you throw all of that into a melting pot, you're not going to get your magic cauldron working.
I haven't met anybody recently that isn't fucked off on the edge of, like an anger meltdown. Everybody is like unhappy, miserable, sick to the back teeth. And, you know, I know Eddie said he's got a quote here. He said something about, like, you know, we feel like we let the country down, right? Let's just rewind again. It's a game of rugby. It's a sport. No one's let anyone down. Nobody didn't try. They might not be very good, but nobody didn't try. And I just think that everyone's so intense and so upset, as if England had beaten Scotland and they'd won, Boris would have gone, fucking hell, do you know what? The boys have done it. You're out of lockdown. It's never going to happen like that. And I think people just need to calm down.
How will Eddie have taken it?
It then brings into the thing about where if you see someone who's played on the England team smile within the next 4 hours, like, see, doesn't give a shit, does he? Doesn't care, Believe you, like, everyone on that pitch slogged their guts out. It might not have gone right for them, but because they smile after doesn't mean it's not hurting inside. It's just part of being a professional athlete. If you there's no point in sulking. That does not make you care about it more by showing, look how angry I am, I'm throwing my water bottle there.
Yeah, but how nice is it to see Scotland smiling? Like, how many times have they been on the receiving end to see Stuart Hogg, probably one of the best fullbacks in the game? You know, Finn Russell obviously has a bit of a mixed bag time with Scotland, but to get those things, but Cam Redpath, all these young guys, to get this opportunity, like, why can't we celebrate them? Why can't we enjoy them? I don't think it's about taking away from someone and giving to the other. It's about going, fuck me, you're great. You know, these guys not so great, but we live to fight another day. That's the beauty of sport.
I asked quite a lot of questions about Hoggy's lid. Now it's a bit darker. I'm not sure it's working. But
I don't like it.
It's good to see it smile.
It goes very nicely with the Calcutta Cup, though. It offsets it does.
I now support my mother-in-law a bit more. She was right all along.
There's a nice photograph, actually, released. Was that on HRH Twitter feed or something? I saw a nice picture of your mother-in-law.
And see it. I don't scour the internet looking for rugby photos like you do on your lonely nights at home.
Yeah. We've all got lonely nights at home at the moment.
Yeah, that's why you should have Durex night for one. That's what I'm telling you.
Quick five questions. How will Eddie have dealt with this? I mean, someone said he was waspish. I mean, I can't imagine he was going to come out clapping and smiling, but does he take these kind of things, Hask, harder than most, or does he just get back on the horse and crack into it again?
You know what he realises, I think, more than anybody else, is that he's the emotional driving force of the team. And I think personally, because I've seen it after games when he's sitting out of eyeshot of the lads and everything else like that, like, he's down, he's stressed. You can see he's, like, you know, working things. But in terms of the front he puts towards the guys, I mean, Mike's point is very apt. A lot of guys are looking around the change room on how to feel. They want to know how to feel because they come off there knowing they've let them down. So if they've opened their phone and some fuckers probably tell them to hang themselves, that's bad enough. But a lot of times you don't even need that. You don't need to be told by some bloke in the newspaper you had a 3 out of 10. You know that you were shit, right? Or you know that it didn't go well. So you're looking for reassurance. If you look around the change room, it's like a morgue. If Eddie comes in, like I talked about before, when we lost the Grand Slam game against Ireland, and Stuart Lancaster and the rest of the coaches never came in, no one said anything, and they were just giving us all stink eye. We felt bad enough as it was. We wanted him to be our emotional energy. Eddie, I'm sure, would have come in and just been like, lads, not good enough. He would have set the tone, but he would have allowed the blokes to understand how they should feel, because that's the hardest thing. It, you know, there's so much pressure to assume, walking around gloomy, do I cry, do I do this? Obviously, people react differently, but I think Eddie would have addressed it to the team and then would have gone away and had some real pretty honest meetings. But I think he would have taken it hard. Like, he once told me that, told the team, that when you win, and this is so true, when you play at Twickenham and you win, you get text messages from people you don't even fucking know. Like, it's amazing. Like, I've played some games and people that would not have pissed on me if I was on fire are blowing out the phone, Hasme, how are you, bud? Long time no speak. If you lose and you come back in it and you're looking for some sort of reassurance, which we all do, men especially, is you look at your phone, you'll get a text from your mum, probably asking about where's the tickets for your dad, not even anything about the game. And if you're lucky, you've got a supportive wife, a message from them. So I text Eddie after the game and I was like, listen, bud, you told me this. And he said, don't forget Annie. Don't forget his dad. He got a message from his dad.
He's accidentally trodden on the phone and texted him.
Yeah, but I think, you know, but I think that's hard. It's hard for a head coach because, you know, he's probably hurting and sore and upset, sorry. But you have to be there. And I think with someone like Owen, you know, he's not going to have shied away. He's going to have stood in the change room and spoken to the lads and told them and given them permission to feel upset, permission to do this, but also to go back to the hotel, sit down and, you know, don't kick stones. Don't, you know, don't sulk, don't moan. Let's work together to make this right. Because the problem is if you separate and pressure can do that, that's where things, you know, losses turn into a habit, you know?
Who is the Hask in this current squad? And at what point can somebody start making... I mean, is it a very sort of black humour, or have you got to kind of just keep your head down for 2, 3, 4 days? At what point can you smile again and say, right,
Well, due to copyright issues, there's only one Hask. My lawyers are talking today. I think...
Thankfully for everyone on the planet.
Thank God for that, yeah.
I think, to be
there
honest...
There are enough brands on the planet to have more than one Hask.
There are. But it's true. There wouldn't be enough money in the world. It's actually, interestingly, so I'll give you an example. We played at the Millennium Stadium and we lost that Grand Slam game. You know, we got absolutely drilled. And that was when I got my 50th cap, like 5 minutes to go. And we actually sat at the bus. You're so down and you're so like, we've completely fucked that. That was a Grand Slam. Not only have we like not won the Grand Slam, but we've been so convincingly we've let Wales win the Six Nations or whatever it was, or whoever won it that year. And you sort of sit in the bus and I think guys start making black humour jokes. Like, right, that's it. You never see me again. I'm off, I'm off to bin juice. I'll be back up at the club. I'm never playing. And then what we do is sometimes we'd read out what people are writing to us. Like, Haskell, you're so shit. You should burn your boots and never play rugby again or something. And we talk about those kind of things. And I think lads will deal with it in a different way. And I think it's important. You know, for example, with the Ireland game, we had come on to someone like Billy Burns, missing that kick at the end. He's going to be sitting in his chair just feeling like absolute stink. So it's important to have a little word, put your arm around him. And I think you sort of monitor that. But I think it'd be very quiet. But the worst thing you can do is let lads separate, put the headphones in, don't engage, because that's when everyone goes off. You sort of need to add a bit of humour. I don't know who in the squad is doing that now, but there will be lads doing it who will add that kind of thing. I think Ben Young's, he tries to be lighthearted in his moments. I think people are quite brutally honest about how they've played, so there will be no escaping it.
I reckon Jamie George will be up there as well in some capacity. Tins, are we looking, do you think, at giving, or do you think Eddie will give the same lot the chance to atone this weekend, or do you think there are one or two who, if you combine other bits, that he might start freshening it up?
I think Eddie might change a few. I wouldn't. I wouldn't train him all week. I'd let him do fizz training, but don't do any rugby training. And then just see,
fizz,
just go right.
Fitness or fizz?
Yeah, fizz as in, gym work and general tick-over work. And then just let him go out there and actually have a bit of panic about playing and go and take some anger out. Don't take anything out of him during the week. Let him fully recharge and let that anger just sit inside them and go take it out on an Ireland team, but on an Italy team. But I think he might change a couple, but I could see him being stubborn and sticking with it and just going, no, I don't care what you say, what I should be doing, this is what I'm going to do. But I could also see it go the other way. Hass, what do you'd be the best to know his mentality. Do you think he'll stick or do you think he'll twist?
It's hard. When things haven't gone well, you don't want to mix everything up because the team doesn't learn and doesn't progress. And if you're trying to create an identity as a team and sort of a game plan, you don't want to do all sale changes, which change that way. Obviously, they're going to want to have changed things to a certain extent. I think some players will, purely because I don't think they performed, will be left out. But then the idea of the Saracens thing is that, they've had no game time, but when you cost them another game and don't give them a game, they're still not going to have any game time. It's a bit odd. I would have thought he's going to tweak a couple of things, but you won't say, I don't think you'll see wholesale changes. Because I just don't think it will suit the team because it doesn't work like that. It's not like a Premiership game where you send them off and you put your bin juice out and all the players play some completely radical style of rugby that you've never seen where lads are like fucking the ball.
You say that. He isn't going to be calling on the bin juice. He might be calling on the shadow squad, though. It is the time to pull them in. When we're at our lowest, we've got the shadow squad.
Do you know, that's a really good point, actually. He probably hasn't got a hand to play because he's limited by COVID restrictions. We shall see. Is there an outcome? I suppose the question is really, the thing about taking on Italy is it's one of those games we say year in, year out, it's really hard to come out with a double thumbs up because if you hammer them, well, of course you're going to hammer them. And if you don't, well, then you haven't done very well. So I don't know whether this is a good game, Hask, to be playing next or whether it's a really tough one to see any real progress from.
I think it is purely because of what I get, the analogy of going in there or the Tins analogy going in with a spork, right? When you play a team like Italy, the things that require no skill, which we got wrong on the weekend, like the physicality in terms of your clear out, the physicality of your breakdown, the physicality in your carry and the getting over the line speed and actually finishing phases and allowing to get players in the game is something that you can really grade. The number of tries you score is irrelevant, but actually trying to do the things that didn't go well this week, get them nailed, is actually really important because you know, when teams change, I don't think there's going to be, contrary to what all the media people have said, some wholesale change where Eddie's going to get out like that Sherlock Holmes diorama with like red strings showing some master game plan with like, it's not going to happen. So what they will try to do is nail those bits on. And I think it's a really good game to do that. I think that they'll really want to impose themselves and maybe sharpen the axe. We've gone from spoons to axe, get the axe out and sharpen it and really, you know, really nail those no skill areas. And then I think maybe, like you said, progress and try to get some confidence back into the lads. So I think it's a great game. I think it's a great game. After that, so much didn't go right, but so much didn't go right of the stuff that is like basement level. That's what people forget in international rugby. Like in club rugby, there's like some givens. At international rugby, the minimum fucking level requirement is absolute physicality and carry, tackle, clear out, set piece. And then everything else is a bonus on top of that. That's where you build from. And the best teams in the world have an arsenal of incredible attacking moves, flair, everything else. But we were below basement level. And that's what they're going to sort out, I think.
Cardiff. Well done, Wales. Irish implosion. Tins, how are you cutting the cake on that one?
A difficult one to judge with Omani being sent off, what, 10 minutes in or whatever it was.
We'll go with Omani rather than Omani.
Alright, see you later, lads. Great to be here.
Todd O'Mahony.
He Tag played well, to be fair.
Didn't he?
Back talking about getting back to throwing people around, his carrying was immense, to be fair to him. Look, I think everyone's gonna say Ireland would have won that if they hadn't lost a man for 60 minutes. I think it's a good thing for Wales. I think it might give them some confidence, but they are obviously health stricken going into next week. I mean, the list I think is endless of people who are injured. Jonathan Davis is out. Josh Adams, obviously. George North. Nick Tompkins played really well, I thought, actually.
Yeah.
They're question marks. Dan Lydiard. Yeah. Johnny Williams. Hallam Amos. I mean, the list is
Thomas Williams.
Long. That's going to be their problem because they're up at Murrayfield, aren't they? Look, I think they would take that win. They were desperate for a win in a tight game. Wales can't control the 14-man aspect of it. So they'll be lifted by that and hopefully trying to put a team together that can go to Scotland. But, you know, Ireland will be kicking themselves. I mean, and whilst we're on in terms of fans jumping on things, there's no need to get on Billy Burns' back. I guarantee he didn't sleep on Sunday night. And it doesn't help with people going and changing his Wikipedia page and everything else. You know,
what happened on his Wikipedia page?
Well, someone changed it and basically said he was an English spy. He joined Ulster just to basically ruin Ireland's dreams of a Grand Slam or something.
I'm not laughing, but I was just
it doesn't need to be done. You know, he's a young man and. Yeah, you know, he's got Ireland out of problems before in other games. Don't be so quick to turn on.
I've got a question for you because I missed it. Did Peter Omani just shout "Maul" so loudly that it gave someone's ruptured eardrums, and that's why the red card? Because I didn't see that. I tuned in after it happened. What did he do?
Yeah, I bet he was just clearing
Thomas
out
Thomas Francis with a shoulder.
Yeah, clearing out a rock, and he didn't attempt to wrap an arm, and then his shoulder went straight into his head. It was always a red. It's one that probably happens more in the game, but you don't pick up some of them, whereas that one is just...
Can I just say, watching Martin Johnson, who is I'm really enjoying, I mean, of course you're going to enjoy him in studio, but watching him, I mean, the number of times he said, well, 20 years ago, I mean, I don't even know what we would be talking about, but of course, in this day and age, you know, that is the right decision. On repeat, you could see him going, I know I've got to say the right thing, but Christ, this is not the game that I was playing. I mean, yeah. I know we're all doing it for the right reasons, but it was quite entertaining watching England's greatest having to format himself into 2021.
Is a tricky one because literally, you know, when Ireland scored, Kian Healy cleared it out, and I reckon if you'd have slowed that down, that would have looked like he's hit the sheriff's head.
So, the best about Martin Johnson was that he used to do that when he was a coach in training to us. I'd be over the ball and he'd be like that. Just fucking elbow me right in the head, and you'd be like, "Jono, you're supposed to have a tackle badge." He's like, "Oh, sorry." You're like, "Oh my god,
I don't like wearing them. I can't get close enough."
I know. Wells is like, "Right, I told you, Jono. I told you, it was soft. I told you, fill him in, Jono." With his big,
he's still, You can still see the flames flickering in the eye.
There was a great thing where Tins was there when we were like, I don't know if we told this before, but they did a short dropout. Jono signalled, just ran short dropout over the top of Crofty, knee Crofty in the boat, elbowed him in the head, caught them all with one hand, fucked off down the wing. Crofty's in A&E, there's air ambulance landing, Jono's trod on him on the way past, and everyone's like, and Jono was the head coach. Wigan Wellesley, like, oh my God, it's fucking Martin Johnson. Hey, horrible, horrible men from Leicester they were.
Pluses for Wales, Justin Tipperick, monumental, 29 tackles.
Yeah, he's in so amongst good, all the mess.
He is.
He's so good. There used to be a rumour going around, like, what had he done? Because I know Sam Warburton was great, but there was a rumour, like, had he shagged, like, Gats and Mrs. or something, because he couldn't get in the team. We would all go, you'd all see him, you'd be like, Justin, what's going on? Because Sam was brilliant, but he... like an all-round footballer, something that I could be described as never having been. He's unbelievable. And I thought Lamore or whoever it was broke, or Stockdale maybe broke down at the end, and he tackled, got to his feet, competed on it, slowed it down. He was just everywhere.
Stockdale was on the field.
Oh, who was it? Whatever it was. Yeah. One of the lads in green did something. And but I thought Tipperick was brilliant. Actually, I like, you know, and even Alwyn Jones is 150. As well,
he's not quite there.
Not there. 146. Because the rugby for all your rugby detail.
Why was there some fucking? There was some whole video thing on him. Everyone going how well he's done to get to it.
Is he 150? 150? No, he's not 150. Caps.
Maybe it's 150 with Lions caps. Gregor Townsend.
He's 146. I think he's 146. Isn't he?
Oh well, that's what they've done. Well, why waste my time on the Six Nations thing? Everyone was thanking him, so I've messaged him going, "Well done."
I tell you who you should have messaged and said, "Well done," to is Jake Ball. So there was a lot of chat. Ask you when I've seen this. That Jake Ball put one on Alan Wynne in the week, so there was a big black eye on the Wales captain. I just wonder whether Jake Ball goes up in your estimations for having taken that on or down. Does anyone go Alan Wynne and come out alive?
Alan Wynne's like really highly annoying in breakdowns. So he's basically like always in the wrong side, always complaining, like, you know. And obviously, depending on if it's a light-hearted session, he's a bit of a groper. Like he's a reverse Joe Marler. So I was sort of surprised he got banged out. I don't know if Alan Jones is known as a bit of a scrapper, but I think he's a pretty tough customer. You know, I think he would have been all right. I mean, I think if you, like, back in the day, if you thought...
Oh, no, I don't think there's any suggestion he wasn't all right. I just thought it was quite interesting that...
No,
I know Jake Ball's on his way out of Wales and going home for the right and family reasons, but he's leaving a calling card.
I have no problem. I wouldn't mind finding Alan Jones. I tell you, I wouldn't. Gareth Delve. He used to be an ex-boxer. When he was playing at Wales, he would have filled me in before you know what was happening. Same thing with, like, Trevor Anus. You know, he played London Irish. When those lads know what to do, it's no point being a big guy like just... haymaking. Those boys are picking people off on the back foot. So, yeah. Josh Lucy was the same. Josh Lucy was horrific. If you thought punched him in a training session, you'd have to have shot him to stop him.
Right. Good to know. Anything, yeah, I mean, Ireland, Tins, do you want to come in off a long run? Is it just a little, you know, break? What are you serving up for?
I thought there was, as I said earlier, I thought actually they were better to watch. I think the balance was better. The speed of their ruck was better, which made it more interesting. I think they just got, can you say they got tired in the second half and just struggled to keep up that tempo. I thought Jordan Lamore would, I mean, he's impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, his feet from beat you in a bone box. But I'm going to hold judgment on there. I think if they'd have had a full compliment for the whole game, I think they would have won that game. But it was better to watch, in all fairness.
I thought Lewis Reed-Samet's finish.
That was outstanding.
Great, outstanding. So I've got, for someone that scored absolutely no tries, I have a real issue with people like fucking around by the try, like putting the ball down with one hand, or like wingers that can't dive. Just beautiful, like control, like, you know, sophistication, like right hand, boom, just dive into the corner. It was lovely, lovely, lovely.
Also, what he did was how he twisted his hips. Once he's in the air, he knows he can let his legs swing out into touch because he knows. So that's sort of a skill in itself, is to jump your body away from the defender that's coming across. Because it doesn't matter if you hit the flag anymore. It doesn't, as long as you're in the air and your body can't be pushed to the floor, a fantastic bit of skill and something that wingers are obviously practicing and working on. But
do you reckon they get that from the NRL? Because the NRL have just been like finishing them tries for years doing stuff like that. People are like, basically vertical upside down, still getting it down.
Yeah, I think definitely. I think it's something the wingers definitely work on now, because there's nothing worse than just getting bundled, pushed into a touch where you could have been aerial and no one could do anything about it once you're in your air. There's nothing you can do.
Tadhg Furlong almost got him as well. It did almost got him. When you see him, you're like, oh, he's absolutely done him. Oh, my God. It's like the Rawalpindi Express, just a super tanker, just like that.
Our friends at the show actually went really well this weekend. Tadhg, Lewis Rees-Zammit, Ellis, best of the England boys, Cam Redpath. Perhaps we've got a little golden touch coming out. Who knows?
Didn't help me in my career.
No, yeah, very true. Well, we shut down your career, actually. That's why we're perhaps giving it back out now.
I'm pretty sure that Tadhg from that Christmas special is not really the biggest fan of the rugby.
That is very true. Okay, we'll keep a keen eye on, obviously, Wales going to Edinburgh, and Ireland, France, actually, is going to be fascinating this weekend. But talking of France, how good or how poor were Italy?
I don't think Italy were that bad. 500 metres of attack, shed load of line breaks. They couldn't finish anything off. But unfortunately, France are unbelievably clinical. You've got two masters pulling the strings. I mean, Jalibert was amazing as well. And then Delanne at fullback is just, you know, we were like, oh, he's got called in the autumn. Oh, wow, he's playing well. And then suddenly he's back again.
He's like a rock star.
Yeah, I mean, literally, no one can touch him. I think this French team could go on to be something really, really special. And I actually thought that Italy at least turned up and played their part in a game, which was good fun to watch. They just got to be more clinical when they get in the opposition's 30. I mean, to get 500 metres of attacking metres, you're not doing loads wrong. Obviously, you're just really struggling to finish it off. You know, they beat 20 defenders. They just don't have that strength in depth, and they don't have those out-and-out finishes. They miss some sitters of chances that you can't afford to do at Six Nations level. But I still don't think it was horrendous from them. I didn't see any light at the end of the tunnel, if you know what I mean.
How long have we been looking at the light at the end of the
tunnel?
You've adopted a very different point to most. Sam Warburton, he said, I think enough is enough now. Italy just don't have the strength in depth from a playing pool point of view. I think there's got to be a change, and it's not just throwing your toys out the pram after one game. I personally think there's got to be promotion and relegation in the Six Nations. We can't keep putting the glass ceiling on these teams in Europe. I think the next international window, Georgia should travel to Italy and you have a playoff game to get in the Six Nations. I would love to see that.
Yeah, I've got no problems with that, but I still think this Italy team would beat Georgia, especially the Georgians that turned up in the autumn.
but they didn't. To be fair, they didn't have their French players then. They didn't have any preparation time. Yeah. They were last-minute call-ups.
But what you get with those Georgians is suddenly you get a team that's just willing to defend and doesn't bring much to attack. So, yeah, I think I know we talked about him a lot in the autumn, that people like Zanon and then Minozzi at fullback. Obviously, I thought the 10 played quite well. They've got to start being more competitive defensively, I think. That's their problem at the moment.
I've been looking up my, Alex, I've been looking up my Blagger's Guide to the Six Nations of things you need to say, and we haven't actually done it, but most people say in reference to France, France are a different beast now, Sean Edwards is involved. Or my favourite one is Jalibert is a special player, and I think when Entomac comes back, he could probably play 12.
Where are you picking these out of?
There's a great. I don't know where it's come from. I think it's Fab Rugby. It's one of the only rugby things I follow. I saw it the other day, and obviously I know fuck all about rugby, so I was actually like upskilling in case I got asked on TV. My favourite was it's a long term plan for Italy. That's what they're trying to work on. It's taking a bit of time. Or Garbisi is such a running threat, and his kicking and passing game is great too. That's how you get out. That's how you get out of it. You know, Wales, if they'd lost, this wouldn't have happened under Gatland. That's what you got to say. Or Alan Jones is incredible. This is his 16th Six Nations. So, I love this shit because that's, you know, because whenever time they talk about France, you're like, oh, it's the unknown animal. But it's what you and I were talking about. It's now like England, the unknown emotional animal. France were once, you know, we don't know what we're going to get with France. You know, they're so crazy. The combination of the Jouet and the mental instability. England, like, one minute they're World Cup winners. World Cup losers, beating New Zealand, winning the Autumn Nations, pumped by Scotland. Like, what's going to fucking happen? I'm trying to think of all new cliches. The Italy argument's interesting, though, about the, you know, because I also think it's always a bit tight when, like, the rules are the rules, and everyone's just trying to get them, boot them out. And until it becomes like a thing, we're just slagging Italy all the time, going, they're shit. And it's like, well, Georgia wouldn't have beat them, as Tin said. They're trying their best. I really don't think, you know, I agree with Sam that there should be some variety, and how long is too long? You know, people halfway through my England career went, there's got to be light at the end of the tunnel with Haskell. Look at him. He's, you know, he's bound to come good at some point. And luckily, they stuck with me to 2016, where it worked out all right. But we've got to extend Italy some courtesy until the rules change. But it's a bit like, you know, someone turning up to a party and you go, oh, fucking hell, Pano's here again. Who's invited him? But while the invitation was sent, we must bring Pano into the fold. It's the same thing with Italy. They're trying their best. And as Tin said, I actually thought there were some exciting bits. I quite liked it. They almost got away. They were never going to beat France because Dupont is fucking unbelievable. You know,
is he best nine in the world right now?
Yeah, Smith, right now.
Faf?
Playing on current form, he's the best nine in the world.
He is special.
He's got great guns on him as well. I will say it's one criticism, and this is down to absolutely no thing of skill, but Finn Russell, absolute spaghetti arms on his shirt. Like, they are tight. He's... Hey, listen, he can't be that skillful and have no arms. He needs to work on his arms. Dupont, mate, he's got some pipes on him, that man. He might even be that big. Yeah. But he's got some...
Because the arms are so short that they seem bigger, I think.
That's Finn Russell's work on. If I'm going to give you a work on Finn, we haven't really hung out before. You probably think I'm a prick. Most people do. But I suggest some arm development, purely for aesthetics, for sponsors, and for the ladies.
His arms look fine when his yellow Lamborghini turns up and it's hanging out the side of it, though, Ask.
Yeah, this is very true. But imagine how many Lamborghinis he would have if he had guns. Because, you know, rugby's important, but guns are more important.
Here's another one.
Even a word.
Alec, another one going back to is obviously Italy had 63% of the possession in that game. So it just
I'm a Norse, Tins. You come with all the frickin' numbers.
64% of possession and territory. Right. So it just shows
didn't
that
do very much there. No. Sorry, can we have an answer then? Do we think Six Nations relegation? Yes or no?
Yes, but not Georgia.
I think a playoff. So whoever wins the whatever the tier two is, plays whoever finishes bottom. I've got no issues with that because it will ultimately help the European game anyway.
I think we should pull a pin out the grenade and just spice it up and be like Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, or, you know, get all that, just throw an absolute grenade in every year, like, you know, like multi-ball, South Africa are in the Six Nations and see what happens. I'd fucking tune in for that. I'd love that.
Yeah, well, I think that is a very genuine opportunity. I just wonder whether US might be quite interesting. You know, what was interesting is I there is no such thing as a layered tweet, but after 45 minutes with France winning by 45 points to 10, I popped out, anyone got a number for the Georgian RFU? Just thinking, this is the point at which everyone... And then suddenly I was like, oh no, Georgia won't do it. And I was like, oh, don't worry about it. It's like, the moment's gone. And then, of course, England lost and everyone came back and said, oh, I'm really not sure that replacing Georgia replacing England with Georgia is the answer. And I was like, oh, for Christ's sake, don't worry about it. You know, things move fast. Let's crack on. Anyway, I then got deeper into this bottle of red and thought, actually, it'd be quite interesting if we got the US involved, because you could then play England in New York, Ireland in Boston, and France in Florida, and suddenly that would actually be quite good fun, and you're opening up a new territory, blah, 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 blah. And then I'd sort of lost interest.
I think we should 100% do it. I think that's what World Rugby, I think it's crying out for. Why not? What's the excuse? Tell me why we can't do it. Why couldn't we open
Surely
it up?
Surely the US would have made greater progress in 25 years than Italy have done.
Yes.
What a night out in New York. Fuck the progress. Nice. I like Rome's good. New York, unbelievable.
That was actually the majority of the responses I got to my Hello Georgia was, yeah, but you're sacking off Rome and I do like a weekend away. I was like, spoken like a true Alakadu. There's the growth of the game right there. Okay, quick look ahead to the weekend. Scotland, Wales, who by how many?
I think with Wales as... selection problems. I think Scotland are going to build on their momentum and I think they're going to win relatively comfortably by 10. Scotland by 10.
Hask, disagree
or
agree?
By the fact that Wayne Pivac's going to have to be playing himself, I would suggest that Scotland are going to win by 10.
On France?
I'm going to say France. France are just going to show their magic and just je ne sais quoi all over those naughty Irish people.
Right. I will also go France, and I think France will win relatively comfortably.
Do you?
Yeah, I think they'll win by 20.
Oh,
Oh, actually, it is in Dublin. Hang on, let me rephrase that.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter in Dublin. They haven't got that small wizard they send out, or the fans.
They'll win by 50.
I'm going to say France going to, as I said already, they're going to win. I don't know by how many. They're just going to do a job.
They won by 9 or whatever in the Autumn Nations Cup without their full-strength team. So,
yeah, I think Ireland are playing better, though. England, Italy. England by 10 or England by 30?
England need to win by 30, at yes. least.
Italy by 5. the world shall end.
Imagine if that comes true and we can just clip that up and put it out on the socials.
Oh, fine. Because by then time, there'll be no one employed to fucking watch it. You lose the fight in Italy. That really will be the end of it. I'll be there with the pitchforks. Burn him! Like, James, you know, he's your mate. Fuck him.
Christ alive. Yeah, that'll be quite a story.
No, I think England by 25, I think, will do a job. But they'll be damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. And the progress will not quench the media and the outraged fans' thirst, but we can only do our best.
Have you been drinking?
No, sadly not. What I was trying to think was, you know the word for when you're full? It's sated, isn't it? Satiated. Yeah. That's what I was trying to use, but I used quenched because I've got an extensive vocabulary.
O'Mahony was literally satiated.
O'Mahony, okay. O'Mahony.
I tell you what, if you think England are having a tough time in the Six Nations, you should check into how our BetUK.com predictions are going. I mean, that really is meltdown across the board. Tins and I are having a rough old time at the moment. If you haven't checked out our Premiership preview, we're going to go again this Thursday with our friends at BetUK.com, who are the official Premiership rugby predictor game. You can check in and have a little look at how to get involved. 14 grand's worth of prizes throughout the 2020-21 season. The player with the most accrued points wins a 5 grand cash prize. The app is available exclusively on BetUK.com's own app to players aged 18 and over, and you can pick that up on iOS or Android, wherever it is you do your apping. Tournament 3 is now underway. If you'd like to get involved, all you need to do is download the BetUK.com app, register or log into your BetUK.com account, select the Premiership Rugby Predictor game from the menu, make your prediction of a home win, a draw or an away win for all 6 of the weekend's Premiership Rugby fixtures. Submit those predictions ahead of the weekend and hope you pick the winners. Good luck. Don't forget T's and C's apply. As we said, 18s and over only. Please be gambleaware.org and please gamble responsibly. Tins, you came up with 50%. 3 right, 3 wrong. I got 2 right and 3 wrong, although one of them was a Hail Mary draw. If we combine, we're going to get close, but we're not. I mean, it all went wrong with Bristol at the start and sort of unfurled from there.
Yeah, it was a tough weekend, but we did say there were some tough games within that. The Northampton game we couldn't really call, which is why you went for a draw, and I just thought Wasps wouldn't be that bad again at home, but they were. I went for Worcester, didn't I, which didn't really work out very well for me. But there you go. Yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it shows the league, it shows what world rugby's like at the moment. It's just, it's hard to predict, and it's good one week, bad the next. Sad times if you have a miserable week with COVID. Sometimes you have a really good one and you're buzzing on the weekend. So who knows what you're going to get.
Hask is in that classic vein right now where, as a player that's done a couple of bits but now isn't getting picked, your stock is rising rapidly. Hask, you've had one go, you've somehow fluked 100% and then you haven't been seen since. Just sort of wondering if you're going to dip your toe back in again or whether you're happy with where you sit.
I needed to check the BetUK actually indemnify me against people going, well, we listened to Hask and we lost a load of cash, they're coming after me. Once I found out that I was actually covered, I'll be fully back into it again, because beneath this kind of cool, calm, slightly weird-looking exterior beats an absolute rugby nose, ready to pounce.
Well hit.
Or it's like the random punter who goes to horse races and picks it on their colour.
I like the name.
Ooh, I do like Bath's away kit. Bath's going to win this one.
That's very good. We're going to do a show on Thursday, I think. But any other headlines? I mean, Exeter just about... Did Exeter beat Newcastle or did Newcastle beat Exeter?
No, Exeter beat them by 6, didn't they?
Exeter beat them by 6. I tell you who I am enjoying is London Irish at the moment, quietly, going about the biz.
Yeah, that's why I was saying that our Stato his stats are is slightly flawed because obviously there were three COVID games within there for Irish where they didn't play. So it looks like they've got an amazing defence and don't score tries, but actually they do score tries and they're actually not a bad team. So, yeah, you can always sneak a bit of, I reckon you can always sneak a bit of value in there until they move up the tables a bit.
I tell you what is interesting is that, by all accounts, relegation was going to be frozen and it was taken to the RFU Council for rubber stamping, and BT Sport have said no, that isn't happening because we're paying a shedload of money. We want storylines across the league. And therefore, if that goes ahead, we're not going to be happy campers. And suddenly, relegation looks like it is going to be back in play this year, which means Gloucester.
Oh dear, Bath, Gloucester.
Well, and Bath. I mean, there's a wobble in the West Country. I just wonder how suddenly, having been able to just think you can start relaxing a little bit, and there's going to be some pretty nervous campers around that part of the world.
It's 12-10-9, isn't it? Bath, Worcester, Gloucester in terms of points. Then there's 8 points to Leicester, and obviously Leicester had a great win with 41-20 against Worcester or whatever. So it's going to be a battle down there, I think. But Gloucester are in a funk that they need to get out of very quickly. And what you don't need to come to town is Bristol.
Yeah.
On the back of a loss.
But you thought, you know, because sometimes, obviously, I'm clearly not involved in rugby anymore in any capacity other than this show. I sometimes just check on people's like Instagrams just to see like how upset people are. And I went on like the Gloucester Instagram to see after a loss. Oh my God. Right. You thought like, because obviously when I say small town place, I'm not being disrespectful, but when I first started playing in Wasps, we had no fixed abodes and we were everywhere. And then obviously went to Northampton and I found a town that everybody lived and breathed it and they were so passionate. Gloucester again is like a really intensified place. Mate, there are people on there fucking losing their minds. Honest to God. We're not putting up with this shit. Fire them all. They're all crap. Fuck off. Get out, you fucking idiots. And I'm like, it's so bad. And
if you want an interesting 30 minutes, Hass, go to the Shed Web.
Oh, God.
You won't see anything like
that. Yeah, but you know what? I made a mistake once as a young player after my first game against Harlequins where things didn't go well and Rob Howley threw me under the bus. I actually went on one of them forums. Mate, it broke me for life. I went on like, I think it was like the Waspy forum and they were like, Haskell's shit, overrated, shit. I was literally, my dad like found me in the room and was like, are you right, son? I was like, all my confidence.
Did you create an account and fire back at everybody? Is this your current modus operandi?
No, well, now I don't give a shit. Now I just come back in all guns blazing. Ah, fuck him up, straight in there. But now, no, I don't do that anymore. I just block everyone. But I did go in there and the worst thing was I'm obviously good friends with George and Dom and Kingy and everything else that. And I'm just like, oh, there's no level-headedness. And I feel sorry for them. But it's business, isn't it? It's one of those things.
Spiz.
Do you reckon Sippy, by the way, do you reckon Sippy's there just going, ah, probably should have kept me on, boys. Probably should have kept me on.
Where is Sips?
Yeah, what's he doing?
Do you
know? No, mate, he ain't talking to me. I don't know where he is. He could be anywhere. He could be in Kylie Jenner's house with his, I mean, actually he's got a wife, so he probably wouldn't be Kylie Jenner. He could be up a mountain looking at a sunset, or he could be anywhere. I don't know. He could be courting a new club. I don't know what he's doing, but I imagine a few people, he's probably sitting there going, I've dodged a bullet here.
Come and have a chat. That's where you are. Right. Any other business before we wrap this up? I'm not sure we've necessarily nailed the jelly to the wall this week, but it's one of those weeks where I think fundamentally we're just like, let's take a big deep breath. Let's look at the bigger picture. Bad days happen. Let's look forward to next weekend and another crack at it. Is that the moral?
Well, I think you know, Scotland were unbelievable. France sensational. Italy were trying their best, but hasn't been quite working. England tried really hard.
A bit like us, really. Italy trying, won't go away. Yeah, everyone wants to get rid of them, but we're coming back.
I think we're the Scotland and France of this weekend, to be fair, with this podcast. Yeah. I think that's where we sit. Yeah.
All right. I mean, I don't know if anyone listens to this anymore. We don't know if we're do we get any viewing figures? I don't know if anyone's listening.
Hello.
I honestly don't know. A part of me, because it's quite therapeutic, it's just nice to have a chat with some people that isn't my wife and my dog. So yeah. I'm just wondering do we even put this out? Like, I wondered if I hear it because I don't listen to it back anymore.
I thought this was a self-help program.
Yeah, I think it probably
what's that one with Jim Carrey where he's just living in a set? It's not on TV.
Truman Show.
Truman Show. That's just the three of us. just in an echo chamber.
Well, do you know what? I'm actually at a game this weekend, incredibly. Cool. I'm 0-2. I'm assuming my presenter role, you know. But I'm actually apparently, even though we lost our favourite producer Si, to an unfortunate tea making accident where a kettle exploded and he was no longer able to work with us, apparently our figures are bigger and better than ever. Contrary to what other podcasts go out there and say with their propaganda, we've completed rugby podcasting.
Right, let's look forward to the weekend. Love, peace, harmony. Let's enjoy the rugby for what it is. Frankly, everyone's doing bloody well to get games going ahead. Enjoy them. Scream, shout, enjoy, celebrate the winners, look after the losers. Oh man, go on.
Hey, what's that song where it goes, it's only a game, so what was that game show?
That was a real game show. Fight.
That's Bullseye.
Yeah.
No. That was Snooker in You Tonight.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's the one with
it's only
Jim,
a game, so Snooker
Pop, Pop Break or whatever.
John
Pop
Virgo. Yeah. John Virgo was the celeb.
Or
Jim Davidson was the host.
Yeah.
If you're trying to big break, if you're trying to lose big your break, just go, remember, it's only a game, so chill the fuck out. That's what you gotta remember.
Good old catchphrase. I'm looking forward to ITV coming on with that this weekend as their title music. Tins, we're gonna another crack on Thursday at our Premiership predictor game.
I'm actually gonna really delve into something. try and pull something out of the bag. It's gotta change.
Betting.com must be just sitting there going, give him another go, roll the dice, another terrible set of selections.
Well, 2 weeks ago, I was 4-4 rolling into a Sunday where I thought I was onto a pretty sure thing, and then we lost both Sunday games. So,
That's the end of the game.
Yeah.
Look out for that on Thursday, wherever you do your YouTubing. And actually, an old friend is back in town. There's a new podcast and a YouTube series that launched on Sunday ahead of his career-defining fight against Jamel Herring. This is Inside Fighting with Carl Frampton. Have a listen to this.
This is a huge fight. I'm a bit surprised, actually. The bookies have me slight favourite. Herring, I thought I was going to go into the fight with the bookies as an underdog. I'm slightly surprised that I'm a favourite in the fight, according to the bookmakers. But it's a fight that, I don't know, I'm just really, really up for this fight. You're always up for a fight, aren't you? But there's something different about this one. This is to become a three-weight world champion. That's big. That's huge. So one foot in the Hall of Fame. The Island of Ireland's greatest ever fighter. And I think, you know, people have me in that conversation already. But I just kind of, I'm happy to be in that conversation. But I would say it myself, I'm the best fighter that these shores have ever produced. If I become a three-weight world champion.
Good. So check out episode 1 of Inside Fighting on YouTube or wherever it is you do your podcasting. That is it for this week. The good, the bad, and the rugby. Well done, Hask. Well done, Tins. What brand have we got lined up for next week?
Simproof, a probiotic and prebiotic. You're welcome.
Do we get paid for embellishing and enhancing your endorsement deal?
Spin-offs.
No.
Well done, Tins, well done, Hask. I have to say, for a rugby show that doesn't talk about rugby, I think we've excelled ourselves this week. Thanks to all of you for listening, for tuning in, and in the spirit of being nice to each other, if you fancy leaving a review or telling Hask you love him or Tins he's great, please do just that. Don't forget to check out the website, goodbadrugby.com, for the Norse stats ahead of round 2 of the Six Nations, and that's where you can tap into our merch as well. Be seeing you soon. Love and hug, look after each other. Rob Brydon, all yours. Bye for this week.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. It can't have been easy.